Men dream of women. Women dream of themselves being dreamt of.
Have you ever awakened in the middle of the night, confused, sweaty, with stinky hair, anxious and absolutely unable to go back to sleep? Not if you're sleeping on one of Dr. Downey's dream-changing pillows. Just snuggle in, close your baby blues, and you're on your way to health, wealth, and sexual fulfillment, or up to your ass in elephants. It's only a dream. You see, Dr. Downey's dream-changing pillows are filled with Yucca Mountain sludge that the government is trying to throw away. But due to a special deal, we have now gotten it available to hold your head solidly in place for a period of extended radiation-enhanced slumber, or your money back, minus tax payment, warehouse, and shipping charges. So call now. It's only five easy payments of $29.99 or a one-time charge for the next 5 years. Credit cards are accepted but not returned. Call now for Dr. Downey's dream-changing pillows. I wouldn't dream of sleeping without one.
Men look at women. Women watch themselves being looked at. Women constantly meet glances which act like mirrors, reminding them of how they look or how they should look. Behind every glance is a judgment. Sometimes the glance they meet is their own, reflected back from a real mirror. A woman is always accompanied, except when quite alone, perhaps even then, by her own image of herself. While she is walking across a room or weeping at the death of her father, she cannot avoid envisaging herself walking or weeping. From earliest childhood, she is taught and persuaded to survey herself continually. She has to survey everything she is and everything she does, because how she appears to others, and particularly how she appears to men, is of crucial importance for what is normally thought of as the success of her life.
Magic mirror on the wall. Who is the fairest one of all?
A woman in the culture of privileged Europeans is first and foremost a sight to be looked at. What kind of sight is revealed in the average European oil painting? There were portraits of women as there were portraits of men, but in one category of painting, women were the principal, ever-recurring subject. That category was the nude. In the nudes of European painting, we can discover some of the criteria and conventions by which women were judged. We can see how women were seen. What then is a nude? In his book on the nude, Kenneth Clark says that being naked is simply being without clothes. The nude, according to him, is a form of art. I would put it differently. To be naked is to be oneself. To be nude is to be seen naked by others and yet not recognized for oneself. A nude has to be seen as an object in order to be a nude.
I had been sent by New York Magazine to San Francisco for a series we were doing called The New Life Out There. We were a little bit Gotham-centered at New York Magazine at that time. everything west of Fort Lee was out there. That was And so one of the things out there was the phenomenon that started in San Francisco of the topless restaurant, the topless bar, the topless waitress, and all of this. It just started in San Francisco. So I was there to write something about all of this because there was a big trial had begun to see whether or not it was legal for this kind of enterprise to be open publicly. And everyone was talking about the trial. So I was there. And who should come to town? But Marshall McLuhan. And I had already started collecting information for a piece on Marshall McLuhan, which was to run eventually in New York Magazine. So I had this brilliant idea. I said, I'll take Marshall McLuhan to a topless restaurant. So sure enough, that's what I did. And I was in the company of two great San Francisco boulevardiers, Howard Gossage, who was a marvelous, raffish advertising man in San Francisco, and Herb Kane, the famous columnist, the most famous columnist in West Coast history, I guess. So we were heading for a place, it was called the Off-Broadway. It was just off of Broadway, the street in San Francisco in the North Beach area. So here we are, the four supposedly sophisticated boulevardiers and Marshall McLuhan. We weren't quite sure what Marshall's reaction would be. So we went into the, none of us had ever been to a topless restaurant. Herb Kane had been to topless, Carol Doda was the girl with the first show business silicone breasts, had a striptease place nearby, but he had never been to the restaurant. So we walk into this restaurant, it's 12:30, high noon time for lunch. The off-Broadway was right in the Montgomery Street section of San Francisco. That's the Wall Street of San Francisco. And here, we suddenly found ourselves in a large restaurant in Stygian darkness, except for spotlights which were picking out the waitresses. All of the customers were men, mostly from Montgomery Street, who seemed to be huddled together in these dark clothes, sort of like men in the back corner of a pornography store or something. And the lights only picked out the waitresses, who were clad, their complete clothing was what the French call a cache-sex. We would probably call a G-string or a mini-thong, and spiked high heels. That was their entire, serving food. They were carrying these trays around, and always a spotlight. There must have been a dozen of them. A spotlight followed them wherever they went. So I looked to Kane, and then I looked to Gossage to try to see, how do you get a take on all of this. They were like I was. They were both speechless, absolutely speechless. We were all in a state of shock, except for one of us, Marshall McLuhan. Immediately, I heard Marshall say, "Well, this is very interesting. It's very interesting." And so I said, "What's interesting, Marshall?" He said, "They're wearing us." And I said, "What do you mean they're wearing us?" "They're putting us on." And I thought that was the greatest Joycean pun that I'd heard in a long time. "They're putting us on." And then he went, we're their towel, or we're their cloak, and we are completely at the service of these objects who are walking around amongst us. So we're finally seated, the waitresses, we're all still in a state of shock, because the waitresses would lean over your shoulder with these pendulous breasts and give you your salad or your soup or whatever it might be. And at this point, I heard Marshall McLuhan say, these dimly lit restaurants are not gustatory experiences. It's not the sense of taste that is being appealed to. He said, they're tactile. And I looked to see if he were smiling, but he wasn't. Not even the glimmer of a smile. Now began the fashion show, which went on every day at lunchtime, in which the topless waitresses would put on various lingerie, mostly, and come walking through the restaurant. And there would be a patter given by a woman who seemed to be, who was the master of ceremony, mistress of ceremonies, I guess. And she would say something like, "And now, here is Miss Stormy Libido, in a open lace chemise." And so here would come this young woman with these tremendous rouged appendices, with sort of jutting through the open wear in the lace. Well, after a few of these had paraded by, Marshall McLuhan called over the woman who was running the show, and he says, "I have a little something for your chat between as the models come out." And she gave him a look to see whether this was some sort of wiseacre or just what. And he says, "Why don't you say that the topless waitress is the opening wedge of the trial balloon?" She gave him a skeptical look. She gave him a quizzical look. And then suddenly she looked like a ewe that had just been poleaxed in the back of the skull at the chute in the abattoir and sort of staggered away. So you can see, not all of Marshall's puns were necessarily funny or even remotely understandable. But
in the European oil painting, nakedness is not taken for granted as in archaic art. Nakedness is a sight for those who are dressed. That is why Manet's painting, which really marks the end of the period I'm considering, is so profound a comment on all the works which preceded it. The story begins with the story of Adam and Eve as told in Genesis. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat. And she gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And the Lord God called unto the man, and said unto him, Where art thou? And he said, I heard thy voice in the garden, and I was afraid, because I was naked, and I hid myself. Unto the woman God said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee.
We were all hopelessly lost, like Adam and Eve. Oh.
Two things are striking about this story. They become aware of being naked because, as a result of eating the apple, each sees the other differently. Nakedness is created in the mind of the beholder. The second striking fact is that the woman is blamed and is punished by being made subservient to the man. In relation to the woman, the man becomes the agent of God. In medieval art, the story is often illustrated scene following scene, as in a strip cartoon. During the Renaissance, the narrative sequence disappears, and the single moment, which is nearly always depicted, is the moment of shame. The couple wear fig leaves or make a modest gesture with their hands. But now, their shame is not so much in relation to one another as to the spectator. It is the spectator's looking which shames them.
Enjoying Lucas Cranach is like visiting a German nature camp. What a lot of nudes there are romping about his pictures. Some of them are Lucretia's. Others are Venus's. But all of them, you feel, are here because Cranach understood temptation and had personal reasons to warn us of its dangers.
Perhaps that's why he's so unusually keen to paint Adam and Eve. Now, the Adam and Eve story, about the first man and the first woman committing the first sin, was the only story in the Bible that forced painters to paint nudes. There's no other way to do it. Clothes, after all, hadn't been invented yet.
Set free in paradise in their birthday suits, Adam and Eve gave Renaissance art a perfect biblical excuse to depict tempting human nudity.
Later, as painting became more secular, many other subjects offered the opportunity of painting nudes. But always in the European tradition, the nude implies an awareness of being seen by the spectator. They are not naked as they are. They are naked as you see them. Often, as with the favorite subject of Susanna and the Elders, this is the actual theme of the picture.
Cézanne, Susan, So Many Muses, iPods, Picassos, Paloma, Red Room Studio, Herbert Baer, Died the Year I Was Born, Speed, Money, Machines, Beauty, Fashion, The Unique Work of Art, go way, way, way back. The velocity of it, multitasking. Patrimony, patriarchy, painting, the pedigree, the provenance, what for? To say that something is true or real, a woman may have actually made Duchamp's fountain.
We join the elders to spy on her. She looks back at us looking at her. Sometimes the woman, Susanna, looks at herself in a mirror, picturing to herself how men see her.
This is known as the mirror self-recognition test. Some versions use a red mark and you pass if you recognize that it's on your own face. Children begin to pass at around 18 months old, which signals a major milestone in their development.
Hi.
The mirror studies are so intriguing because at a very intuitive level, we relate to the mirror. Looking in a mirror and recognizing yourself has something to do with self-awareness.
Humans aren't the only animals that can recognize themselves. Chimps were the first to pass the mirror test. Then others followed. Dolphins, elephants, even magpies.
She sees herself first and foremost as a sight, which means a sight for men. Thus, the mirror became a symbol of the vanity of women. Yet the male hypocrisy in this is blatant. You paint a naked woman because you enjoy looking at her. You put a mirror in her hand, and you call the painting vanity, thus morally condemning the woman whose nakedness you have depicted for your own pleasure, and thus, incidentally, repeating the biblical example by blaming the woman. The Judgment of Paris was another favorite mythological subject with the same inwritten idea of men looking at naked women and judging them. Paris awards the apple to the woman he finds most beautiful. Beauty in this context is bound to become competitive. The Judgment of Paris is transformed into the beauty contest. Aesthetics, when applied to women, are not as disinterested as the word beauty might suggest. I don't want to deny the crucial part that seeing plays in sexuality, but there's a great difference between being seen as oneself naked or seeing another in that way and a body being put on display. To be naked is to be without disguise. To be on display is to have the surface of one's own skin, the hairs of one's own body, turned into a disguise which cannot be discarded.
Esther was like a kind of wood nymph or sprite, you know. She would flit through the autumnal meadows, backlit with the glowing light of the sun or those huge lights they use when they make movies. I forget what you call them. Anyway, she was just beautiful. Porky Samuelson, the picture director, used to say that Esther was like a metaphor in bloom.
Most nudes in oil paintings have been lined up by their painters for the pleasure of the male spectator owner, who will assess and judge them as sights. Their nudity is another form of dress. They are condemned to never being naked. With their clothes off, they are as formal as with their clothes on.
Oh, and this is your wife, I guess? I see she's a natural brunette.
Whoops. How the hell did that get in there? Mr. President, here's another picture of Priscilla.
Oh, wow, yes. Well, she looks great with clothes on, too.
Those who are not beautiful. Those who are given the prize.
Yes, at the Custer Memorial Indian School, Eddie's one of our prize students. We're giving him away next week.
The prize is to be owned. That is to say, to be available. Charles II commissioned this secret painting from Lely. It's like hundreds of others. It might be Venus and Cupid. But in fact, it was a portrait of one of his mistresses, Nell Gwynne. It shows her passively looking at the spectator, staring at her naked. Her nakedness is not an expression of her own feelings. It is only a sign of her submission to his demand. The painting, when he shows it to others, demonstrates this submission. His guests envy him. By contrast, in another tradition, nakedness is a celebration of active sexual love as between two people, the woman as active as the man. The actions of each absorb the other.
And the glorious sunsets and the fig trees in the Alameda Gardens, yes, yes. And all the queer little streets and pink and blue and yellow houses and the rose gardens and the jessamines and geraniums and cactuses and Gibraltar. As a boy, where I was a flower of the mountain, yes. Where I put the rose in my hair like the Andalusian girls use, yes. and how she kissed me under the Moorish wall. And I thought, well, as well him as another. And she asked me, would I? Yes, to say, yes, my mountain flower. And first I put my arms around him, yes, and drew her down to me so I could feel her breasts all perfumed, yes. And his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said, yes, I will. Yes.
In oil painting, the second person, or the second person who matters, is the stranger looking at the picture. The nude in European oil painting is usually presented as an ideal subject. It is said to be an expression of the European humanist spirit. I don't want to reject entirely the truth of this, but I've tried to add to it, starting off from a different viewpoint. Dürer, who believed in the ideal nude, thought that this ideal could be constructed by taking the shoulders of one body, the hands of another, the breasts of another, and so on. Was this humanist idealism? Or was it the result of an indifference to who any one person really was?
Give me immortality! Or give me death. That's the motto here at Ralph's Ball Sports, new and used body shop in the city of the future. Hi, friends, Ralph's Ball Sports here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going out of body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around you like rotten fruit, and here's how. Lease an organ or limb from our headless body farm. It's made in America from Americans. Enter the new century with these exclusive clone-ons. Nap velour designer jeans. Deluxe follicle hair mat grafting with upgraded media-sensitive stimulated wrapper filler. Rear roll, non-glossy carbon intensified glutal guards, power moons, and tinted tint grill spoilers in slash dash or faux flannel. So come on down to Ralph's Ball Sports, City of the Future, and do it today because there may not be a tomorrow.
Do these paintings celebrate, as we're normally taught, the women within them, or the male voyeur? Is there sexuality within the frame or in front of it?
We have an image, of course we all have an image of ourselves, and it's a visual image. But I wonder how much this sort of classical European painting has shaped that image. In my own case, I find it quite impossible when I look at the paintings that you show in your film. I can't take them seriously. I cannot identify with them because they are so immensely exaggerated always. You know, they fasten on to some secondary sexual characteristic. You know, these enormous breasts and sort of great big bee sting bottoms, you know, and those huge things like that. And they just aren't real. Whereas with photographs, you can feel that is potentially, that's possibly me, although no, it probably isn't. But these nearly all the paintings you have shown are what is called idealized. And therefore, they are, to me, very unreal in connection with any deep down image that I might have of myself, and in connection with any deep down pleasure that I might have in looking at another female body. They don't give me that kind of pleasure at all. I can admire them as painting, but they don't mean human beings to me.
Well, okay, then we could take the shortcut through Frogtown.
All right, we could stop off at Pop's and dig some jugs.
Some what?
Oh, that Louise Wong's got a balcony you could do Shakespeare from.
Dick, I gotta tell you, I think that the hormones are kicking in. I'm actually beginning to get some titskies now.
Oh,
and I'm gonna
man.
Show them to you right now. Look!
Oh,
look!
Yeah, it looks, it's a Mercator projection. Hey,
I didn't think the sex operation was gonna take, but.
Hey,
man.
Listen, how many dumb blondes does it take to screw in a light bulb? I don't know, because I was screwing the dumb blondes. And with us
Wake up today.
Hey, the rest of our posse is here today. Here's the man, the numbnuts of extreme sports.
Show us
the man
your nuts.
With the thickest neck in the business, Dink Shrinkwrap.
Hey, nummy.
This is Dink Shrinkwrap from Utah. The greatest event in human history is... It's over.
It's over, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got nothing to do. Where am I going to go?
Think something up, man. We've got all day. This
well,
is all
can we get a bunch
show?
Of, like, you know...
Get some girls. Let's get some girls out there, like me, and let's show them their our ditskies.
I don't feel too comfortable with that girl stuff, you know? I like just big guys smashing into each other. They can wear a lot of jewelry, but as long as they're smashing into each other... There's no sexual innuendo in my world.
Girls can smash into each other,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, didn't you see the Winter Olympics?
Yeah.
Girls are smashing into each other.
We smashed into each other
wait, really good.
Yeah.
What about patriotism? What about youth? What about the National Olympic ideals?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, you're just talking about, you know, private
parts. Oh, you're so funny. You're living in another world.
Hey,
oh, well. He's been in the snow too long. He's been in the cold too long. He's shriveled up.
Hey,
he's shriveled up.
Jiggle tits, what is that? Perfume you wearing.
This is postpartum depression. Do you like it?
Oh, I love it.
See, I'm still wet.
Oh!
I'm wet all over!
The image that I compare myself with is the photograph, because it's with photographs that I've been encouraged to think of myself in this way. It is essentially advertising for me that's contributed to this.
Give me the negative, of course. Here it is.
Oh, at last. Now we're out of your evil clutches.
Dan, wait a minute. Look at this negative. It isn't us. It's an interesting approach, but it isn't us.
She's right. What are you trying to pull on me, Rococo?
Oh, my goodness. I must have sent the wrong negative to the police. I must have left yours in the car. I'll go get it.
A second, Rococo. You're not going nowhere until you've explained what you've done with that filthy piece of blackmail.
And consequently, I find it extremely interesting to go back and think of nudes in this way, because I've never done so. But having seen the film, I have no doubt that the same thing applies.
And do you find... The nudes in painting unreal in the same way.
Yes.
Well, you can't get any information from it, can you? It's no guide towards the future.
I mean, what kind of information is lacking?
Oh, well, activity, you know, dynamism, anything. It is how someone sees you, and that's all. It's something laid on you.
I'm glad you showed the Manny picture, because I always find this extremely shocking, you know, because the men are dressed and the women are naked, and this seems to me to sum up the whole situation. It's a humiliating position, and these women are aware of being humiliated, and I think this is part of the whole scheme of things. I mean, as most people have had at some stage in their life, sort of nightmares about running through the streets with nothing on and everybody else is dressed, and this seems to me one element in the pictures.
A very interesting thing you said in the film was about how nudity was really a kind of disguise. It wasn't the real person themselves and free, but it was just another garment they were wearing, and worse than a garment in a sense, because it's something that you can't take off. This comes, I think, from nudity being combined with a pose, and that's inevitable if you're going to have a painting of a model.
This magazine was called Cloud Nine. And when he shyly leafed through it in lieu of buying food, he saw that it contained page after page of pleasant and naked and smiling young women, most dressed only in low white tennis shoes, each topped with the then currently fashionable helmet-headed bouffant look to their hair-sprayed hair. These women seemed to enjoy displaying themselves and their nakedness for unseen photographers. Cloud Nine was a peppy world, or so it seemed, probably because of the tennis shoes, which gave a kind of sporting look to every activity of sexual display. He had often heard the expression, up on Cloud Nine, but he'd given it no special meaning, thinking of it only as an imaginary place, like Easy Street, perhaps. And neither Easy Street nor Cloud Nine had seemed to him to be the domain of peppy fecundity, romping grounds of naked young women with helmet heads of careful hair. In later years, when he heard the expression, he knew precisely why a person was happy on Cloud Nine. It was not Cloud Eight, and it was not Cloud Ten. It was Cloud Nine, the place where the women with helmeted bouffant hairdos dressed only in low white tennis shoes were devoted to pleasing a man by taking on themselves the odd combination of servitude and dominance that goes by the name of posing.
Posing was at the essence of the control of women, he thought, and it was something that he had never known real women to be the least interested in.
In a way, I think that we're always dressing. We're always dressing up for a part, always putting on a uniform of one kind or another. And I think women do this almost more than men. Men have only begun doing it fairly recently. Women are always dressing to show the kind of character that they want to represent, the mother, the working woman, the pretty young chick. And nudity is a uniform, in a way, for I'm ready now for sexual pleasure. You see, and so it doesn't. You can't identify being nude with being free.
I've only just recently read that book Histoire d'eau, which describes the way in which a woman is reduced for the sexual pleasure of the man she's in love with to a complete object. And what struck me in all that book as the most impressive image was the fact that she was told that she was never to touch her own breasts, to entirely close her mouth.
Well, you know, Tonto, no other organ of the female anatomy can be so easily injured.
Who is that man?
Such injuries may often turn out to be permanent. If you wish to massage your breasts, Sheriff, do it gently and slowly. Avoid vigorous and too frequent use of this practice. Should you wish to massage, do so at night and for no more than a period of 10 minutes. Always rub around and around and up. Never should you push your breasts down or flatten them. To do so might very easily weaken the muscles supporting them and tend to stretch the tissues.
Or to put her legs together. And so the whole point about her stance all the time was that she was available. And this, the sense of being available, the sense of waiting for other people, is the very antithesis of action. And it, you know, just like the whole the Brook Street Bureau advertisement, Tony hasn't rung, you know, he's 3 minutes late in ringing. And you feel this whole situation, the number of women you talk to who say, mm-hmm. I stay in so many nights a week waiting for somebody to ring, you know, mm-hmm. that the concept of availability implies passivity, because if you're simply waiting for somebody else to act, then you can't act yourself.
Yes, it's like you will awake when a man taps you, you know, when a man kisses you, you will arise and get off your bed. But really, it's an excuse to get yourself going. I think women are too shy.
But I do think that the sort of essence of self-delight as a kind of possible thing in the modern world, and something that fewer women have than men and want and must have, is the power, the compulsion, not the power, the compulsion to make contact with the world as you are living in it. And when I say that, I don't just mean the people next door or your friends. I simply mean what is going on.
Oh, I'm not so sure about the delight. I think it's a very double-edged thing. I know, as I suppose I've always known, but I became aware of it in this film, that I have never consciously looked at myself in the mirror and seen myself as I am. I always see the image that I want. I know, and my children notice it, that if I make up my face, I put on a certain expression. If I, from adolescence on, if I've seen myself naked in the mirror, I have not thought of myself as naked, I have thought of myself as a nude. And I think this comes very largely from having been trailed around all the major art galleries in adolescence. You know, this is culture, this is beauty, with a capital B. And of course, up to a point from advertising too, but much more the painting thing. That you think the female body is beautiful. I am a beautiful object. If not, I have to do something about it. And therefore, the painful part of the narcissistic thing is, I think, the feeling of inadequacy. Now, this business of always posing in a mirror, I think one does absolutely automatically, and the result is that if you actually catch yourself in a mirror, by chance, that's not deliberately because you're getting dressed or something, you've had a bath, but because there's one in the street, or you catch yourself in a shop window, it's a tremendous shock, because you suddenly see yourself as you are, which is windblown, untidy, badly dressed, tired, and so on. You don't see the pose at all, and I think this is what happens to women.
You never look at me from the place I see you.
There are some paintings, and I think at this moment in particular of one painting, where there's a woman who is wearing a garment. She's not nude, but it is a garment so loose, so comfortable, so easy. And it's my idea very much of what a picture of a woman might be like. I think it's actually before your period almost. It's so long ago. I mean, it's by Lorenzetti. It comes in The Good and Bad Government. It's a fresco. It's very, very old, you know, and it is a picture of a woman who is supposed to represent peace. It's quite extraordinary, but she could be one of the liberated or trying to be liberated young women today. She is at ease. She is relaxed. She is not playing any part at all. She is able to combine pleasure with thought and with dreaming, and she might spring into action at any moment. And for me, she has much, much more to do with nakedness, with oneself, with the truth about oneself than any number of nudes that I've ever seen.
Whoa. Don't fall out the door, Danny.
No, I'm holding on. And the snow is milling around the chopper door out there like a crowd of sparkling superstars waiting for their 15 minutes of fame before they melt.
Hey, we haven't even got 15 minutes left, Danny.
Hey, Roger, people, we're on top of the homeless now.
And I'm going to be tossing these gorgeous little Princess Goddess talking pocket dolls up by the handful way down there to the children of disprivileged hopefuls from all over now town.
Is that a goddess in your pocket? You're just glad to be up here.
Yeah, I'm going to go get the first box of dolls, Captain.
Box of dolls? It's only one of them, Danny. It's a doll drop, remember? One doll, one drop.
I love you, Danny.
Wait. You're going to drop her? Oh, no. You can't do that. Take us down, Happy.
Holy monster! Do you see that? This is it, Danny. Charlie's got a face on us. Incoming! We gotta lighten the load. Captain Morgan's dead. Hanoi Jane has gotta go. Push her out.
No!
Do it, soldier. That's an order.
Come fly with me.
Sure. Okay, I will. Take my hand.
Hello. Don't worry.
We're camels in the wind.
It's 100 ticks to the ground. The only impact was some lucky foundling in about... Hold it.
Happy New Year, Happy!
They're flying. She's got wings, do you copy? Oh my God. They're heading straight for the Golden City on the other side of midnight. That's gotta be a happy ending. We're at minus 60 and counting. I'm heading home.
Take heart, dear friends. We are passing through the darkening of the light. We're going to make it, and we're going to make it together. Don't get ground down by cynicism. Don't let depression darken the glass through which you look. This is a garden we live in, a garden seeded with unconditional love. And the tears of the oppressed, and the tears of the frustrated, and the tears of the good will spring those seeds. The flag has been waved. It says occupy. Occupy Wall Street. Occupy the banks. Occupy the nursing homes. Occupy Congress. Occupy the big law offices. Occupy the lobbyists. Occupy yourself. Because that's where it all comes together. I pledge to you, from this moment on, whatever it means, I'm going to occupy myself. I love you. See you tomorrow.
Standing by the highway, a suitcase by my side, and no place I wanna go. I just thought I'd catch a ride. Many people look my way, and many pass me by. In moments of reflection, I wonder why. I'm a bandit, oh, the mothers think I'm a son. To the preachers, I'm a sinner, Lord, I'm not the only one. To the sad ones, I'm unhappy, to the losers, I'm a fool. To the students, I'm a teacher, with the teachers, I'm in school. To the hobos, I'm imprisoned by everything I own. To the soldier, I'm just someone else who's dying to go home. The general sees a number of politicians too. To my friends, I'm just an equal in this whirlpool. Magic mirror, won't you tell me, please? Do I find myself in anyone I see? Magic mirror, if we only could try to see ourselves as others would. I'm suspicious, it's in the way I look. I'm just another character to feed the printed book. To the censor, I'm pornography with no redeeming grace. To the hooker, I'm a customer without a face. And the sellers think I'm merchandise, they'll have me for a song. The left ones think I'm right, the right ones think I'm wrong. And many people love my way, pass me by, and in my quiet reflection I wonder why. Magic mirror, won't you tell me, please, do I see myself in anyone I meet? Magic mirror,